Welcome back to another great episode of the Hypocritic Podcast. This is episode 55. My name is Nick, and today I am joined by my lovely co-hosts, Trent and Steven. We are all remote today, coming at you live for a big episode of the podcast. And before we get into all of that, just a quick disclaimer. If you're new to the show, please take the name of the podcast literally. This is the Hypocritic Podcast. We are not real critics. We just like to talk about movies. So each week, you know, we go around the circle and just pick one of our top movies and break it down, talk about some of our favorite scenes, director and cast, all that good stuff. But boys, I'm excited to jump into this one.
Me too.
How are we feeling tonight?
Hypocritical critics. Feeling good, Hypocritical Critics, compadres without credentials, and follow us on the Instagram at hypocritic_podcast. And
we've
5 stars in a review on the platform, and we appreciate
and
that.
And we will be spoiling this movie in deep detail. We'll go into, like Nick said, some stats about it, some questions, a little 5 for 5 game show round, director in the cast, and then some of our favorite scenes. But Nick, what movie did you pick this week?
Yeah, so this again is episode 55. I went in my bag for this one. I don't know, it's kind of been circulating in my mind.
Okay.
And it is just a great movie, big Morgan Freeman movie. I think our first Morgan Freeman movie, which I'm excited to talk about. But without further ado, this is Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank Redemption.
Big movie. Everybody loves this movie. If you haven't seen it, I'm excited to hear what Steven thinks because it's his first time seeing it. But great movie. I done some research on it, excited to talk about it.
Shawshank Redemption. A little plot, got a prison feel for it. Nick, why don't you give a little bit more on that?
I'll give a little bit of a plot. So Andy Dufresne, who's played by Tim Robbins, is sentenced to 2 consecutive life terms in prison for the murders of his wife and her lover, and is sentenced to a tough prison. However, only Andy knows he didn't commit the crimes. While in prison, he forms a friendship with Red. Wow, this is a shitty plot.
Experience
brutality of prison life, adapts, helps the warden, etc. Wow, that's a terrible plot. I'll give it a little free hand.
Okay.
I literally googled that. It was like the first thing that popped up. It sounded like a fourth grader wrote that. But it's based on a Stephen King novel, which I guess is our second time doing this because we did The Shining, and I actually kind of forgot it was a Stephen King based
King novel. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I just saw that too.
And I'll be comparing it. I'll be comparing it to the book. Don't you worry, Stephen.
Good.
I know that gets you rock hard.
It does. It does.
But so it's basically about this guy, Andy, who in a way gets framed for the murder of his wife and this guy that she was having an affair with. And it's basically just a prison movie and ultimately a prison escape movie. And it's such a cool movie. It just has so many themes about like friendship and hope and shows like a lot of like harsh realities of prison. And it's narrated by Morgan Freeman and he just does a phenomenal job. It's just a sick movie. I really, really like this movie.
Yeah, I really, really like this movie.
Yeah, it was giving me some Prison Break vibes.
I agree. It's
total
it's,
Prison Break vibes, dude.
I also saw some themes about religion just a second ago when I watched a little review on it. It's got some biblical kind of themes. Essentially, the main character is like Jesus they were comparing. But we can talk about more of that later. What do you guys say?
Yeah, just wanted to tease you guys with a little quick plot, but I'm excited to jump into it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's hop into it.
Cool.
Hypocritic Podcast. Back. How are we doing?
We're doing well today, everyone. It's good to be back.
Cheers, boys. Thursday Cheers. Night pod.
Clink.
It is clink.
How are we living?
June 8th.
What's new?
No, it's July.
How are your July 4th? July 8th. How are your July 4th?
Felt good to be, in America, Independence Day. I just kind of was by an ocean and watched the fireworks kind of very much near Fort Sumter, so I was very much in Independence Day.
Oh wow, you're like
feels
nice.
You're at the start of it all, huh?
Yeah, I'm kind of
at ground zero over there.
The crux of So spirits were high. What about y'all?
Nick, did you see any fireworks?
No, I just I was surprised I made a Harry Potter reference and you didn't jump all over that like a.
I didn't. I must not have heard you. What'd you say?
I heard it, Nick, and I chose to go.
I said Horcrux, but we'll dodge around that.
I did not hear. I didn't catch that. I wasn't listening to Trent.
But my 4th of July was good. I went to a lake as well, a body of water in the mountains. Mm-hmm.
Good.
It was nice. It was nice. We had a really good camp spot, like almost like a private section. We had like three campsites, like almost grouped together in like this private cove of this like lake. And we just brought like paddle boards and kayaks and all that stuff.
Nice.
But we went like all out, like these girls planned like these, almost like these survivor type of games, Trent, like, these like we were near the body of water and we were doing these like these relay race things and like these strategy games and stuff.
You know, that's my shit.
It was fun. Wow. It got really competitive because what happened was my team was getting our ass kicked all day, but we won the last round where they were like, okay, this round counts for like 20,000 points or something like that. So basically it's like fibbage when you get down to the last round. If you win like the last one, you're going to win basically. Yeah. So we lost like almost every game except we won the last game and we technically won and they were like furious. The other team was so mad. And
that's pretty sick though. But you're talking about a lake with mountains around you. So you're low in elevation. That's pretty sick.
Yeah. I mean, it's still high elevation, but it's like you have like, you know, 13,000 foot peaks around you, but you're like maybe at an elevation of like, I don't know, 9,000 feet or something below it. But you see these like massive peaks behind you.
Is the water cold?
I'm imagining this unreal little cool lake / lagoon that's with these mountains around it.
Nick, could you go in it?
Or is it too cold to
go in?
Yeah, you could get in the water. Dude, I took Rusty out, and thank God I put a life jacket on him. But I haven't taken him out on a paddleboard before, and I was just getting like overconfident on it because I was like sitting down paddling with him, and I was like, I'm gonna like stand up, and this is gonna be dope. Like I'm gonna be standing up with my dog on this paddleboard, and so I'm standing up on the paddleboard. I'm like basically, I don't know, 50 yards from the shore, and so it was like pretty deep, and totally lost my balance and just fell in. So like Rusty just like sinks right into the water and it takes him like 2 seconds to pop up and I'm just like, oh my God, like thank fucking gosh he had a life vest on. But he's good at swimming now, like he swam to shore and everything. But another thing that's new that I wanted to comment on real quick, and we'll get to you next, Steven, don't you worry. But I just bought this dope projector for my room.
Oh dude, it's I saw that, it's so cool.
It's like 200 inches or something.
So it's worth it. Because I feel like the technology has never been there until like recently.
Now it is. Like, I feel like I bought it at a right time. Because like, if you look at like the projector, I'm going to sound like a real nerd on this, but like, if you look at like the projector market, like what's out there for projectors, like most of them are between like $50 to like $200. And like, I almost bought a $70 one, but it was like 720p. It didn't have Bluetooth. So I ended up dropping a little bit more to get the 1080p one with Bluetooth. And it's so sick because like last night, for instance, Rachel was sleeping and I come in, I turn on Shawshank at the end of the movie and I just hook up her Bluetooth Beats and I'm just like watching the movie with like Bluetooth headphones.
That's sick.
Like with this awesome like 200 inch display. And it's sick. It's not like perfectly centered. Because I probably have to get it professionally mounted or like better mounted, like to center it to make it as clear as possible. But so it's kind of off kiltered a little bit, but it's sick, man. It's
how much did you how much did you spend on it?
After tax, it was like $200.
And
see, that's interesting because I've thought about that. I wouldn't want that in my room, but in my living
room,
I've
got wall. This.
Yeah, well, on this in my living room, I have this outdated TV that I can't run HDMI to, And I've tried to run converters for it, but it's never worked. But that's actually, now that you said that, I'm like, I don't want a really big TV in there. I'd rather just have a really big projection in there for when I do use it. So maybe I might just go that route.
Yeah. And you don't even need like a white screen. Like I had read reviews on some that it's like really grainy if it's against the wall, because it can pick up like the texture and the paint and stuff. But dude, it's super good picture, like way better than I thought. And you can like hook up an Xbox to it. There's so many different like port. Like if I want to, it already has really good sound. But if I want to hook it up to like a nice like Bose like speaker, I could, because it's got Bluetooth and all that. So
what's the
you said Bluetooth and I immediately knew. I was like, it could definitely take HDMI.
What's the brand?
The Bluetooth
name
thing is cool too. I think that'd be a cool thing. And
so the people know, what's the brand that is not a sponsor?
It's called Fangor.
Okay. Just so the people know.
But there's a ton of different brands. Like I just always go on Amazon and just read a ton of reviews and try to find something I like. But it's sick, man. I would highly recommend it if you have like obviously the setup. Like you need a big wall and stuff. Cause I didn't even measure my wall and it just happened to fit perfectly. And it's like I'm sure you could finagle it in a way to make it smaller, but anyways, what have you been up to, Steven?
Yeah, what's up, Steven?
Not much.
How was your fourth?
The fourth was nice. We just went over to my Nana's house, hung out with my mom's side of the family, and then went over to Courtney's side and hung over with Courtney's side of the family later on, watched some fireworks. And then, you know, it was kind of like 9:30 and I was like, all right, we got to go because, you know, I have work the next day. So, you know.
Yeah. Did Braylon get
other than that, you know.
Braylon get a sparkler?
Just been hanging out. Yeah, we had some sparklers and she burned herself, of course, at one point. So.
I feel like
as
if
one
I was.
Does at that age.
No one brought a lighter. So we're sitting there like asking other people for lighters. It's pretty funny.
That would be so cool if I was 3 and I got a sparkler. I feel like that'd be like, you know, that would make my year.
And then I get one lit and I'm thinking that it can light the others. And then, you know, it doesn't because they go pretty quickly. Those sparklers.
Yeah.
I miss going to the Indian Hills Country Club and watching fireworks there.
Yeah.
Classic. Gosh,
yeah, I know.
Miss going there.
I was thinking of The Sandlot. You guys like that movie? The Sandlot's such a good movie. There's a great 4th of July scene when they're playing baseball into the fireworks. Mm-hmm. Classic
that
movie. It's on Disney Plus. I guess Disney owns the rights, or I guess they, I don't think they made that movie, did they?
Disney, I don't know, but I feel like
it's on Disney Plus though. I watched.
You know, I think Independence Day was on TV, Steven.
Oh, really? I'm sure it was.
Episode 0.
Perfect movie for the perfect day.
A great transition here from American freedom and being lucky to have freedom is talking about this movie where there is lack thereof freedom. Jumping into the movie and glad to hear everybody is doing well and had a good fourth. But again, Shawshank Redemption. You guys want to hop into some stats and facts here?
Yeah, let's do some stats and facts.
Hop in that stats and facts.
Welcome back. It's stats and facts time, ladies and gentlemen.
Stutz and Fuchs.
Stutz and Fox.
Stutz and Fuchs.
Stutz and Fox.
Stats and facts. Nick,
Shawshank.
Drop some knowledge on us this week. This movie, you know, and can I do want to talk about the themes of, you know.
Nick?
I don't know if maybe in this section or another section you want to talk about the themes of just the psychology of what these people are going through just throughout this movie. But I want to know some knowledge about this movie.
Oh, we'll get into all that dirty, don't you worry. But first off, we'll get into some of the more high-level stuff here. So Shawshank Redemption came out in 1994. In terms of the reviews here, we got the highest rated movie on IMDb history, this movie, at a whopping 9.4 sometimes, but right now I'm seeing it at 9.3, but it's still, like, I've looked on several websites, it's still the number one rated movie, even above Godfather, Forrest Gump, all these huge movies.
Okay.
It's got 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, 96% Google users, and 80% Metacritic. They can kick rocks. They don't know what they're talking about.
That's kind of high. That's pretty high.
80%?
Oh, gives us
no,
a...
For, talking about the, a I'm talking about IMDb. About
what Trent
thinks. Oh, you're talking about IMDb. Yeah, super high. So I was actually listening to... Steven, I think you'd actually like this podcast or this this YouTube channel. It's this guy, Michael Francis, who's like one of the only remaining like mafia guys. And he just talks a lot about some of the stories of the mafia and things like that. But he reviewed this movie and was talking about how... So this movie came out in 1994, the same year as Forrest Gump and Pulp Fiction,
wow.
Which talk about a big year in cinema. I mean, these three movies coming out, it's crazy. So I think those two movies definitely overshadowed this movie and the box office. It was one of those movies where the box office was pretty, I guess marginal compared to what the other two movies did, Forrest Gump and Quentin's movie. Jumping into
the box
office, and also it had a weird name too. Like when you first hear the name of this movie, it almost sounds like it's like a horror movie or I don't know. It's just
Lauren thought it was
got a weird name.
Yeah, Lauren thought it was like some weird, not prison movie, but like some
psychological
like,
thriller.
Yeah, some like killer movie or something like that.
Yeah. So it definitely had that vibe, and Morgan Freeman even said that something similar about that. But it did $58.3 million at the box office with a $25 million budget. And I read something about, the film's initial gross could not even cover the cost of its production. It did another $10 million in the wake of its Oscar nomination. Oscar nominations, but the film was still deemed to be a box office failure.
Yeah.
And Morgan Freeman said something similar because back then when there was no internet, I guess word of mouth played a much bigger role in any film's success. So just being like, hey, you should go see this like Shawshank Redemption movie. It's kind of, and you don't have like the internet to like look it up or.
Or MySpace. I have here, it says, although a very modest hit in theaters, it became one of the highest grossing video rentals of all time.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, I feel like people sleep on art all the time.
Yeah,
it's especially. Like even, I mean, recently, rest in peace, Pop Smoke, but I mean, Pop Smoke's like all over the radio now. And it's like, I really didn't even know who he was until he died, to be honest.
Yeah, so I mean, same.
Like,
I would say
people like don't even like give the art its due, especially in the beginning. It's like later on, and they analyze it, and the right people see it, and you know.
I would say a similar situation with Mac Miller.
Well, Mac
For sure.
Miller. Even, I mean, we,
it, people
we were
did listen
to him way
but
back
he...
in the way back in the day, but it was just one of those things that, I mean, there's definitely a lot of people that just sleep on art. In general,
you just appreciate it more once somebody passes, I think, for what it was, maybe. And knowing that they're never going to make new art again, you know, you kind of just got to cherish what they did.
And this is a movie, it's very different, but I'm just talking culturally, the people, you know, these great works of art similar to this movie. And there's other movies that we've talked about on this podcast that have not done great right out the gate. This should be a catchphrase.
Sure.
Not that great right out the gate, but you know, they overall, they do really, really well. And like you said, Rotten Tomatoes, this is one of the highest rated ones. And Nick,
IMDb,
you put Rotten Tomatoes in the utmost highest regard.
I think the combination of IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, typically they get it right, but there are some movies that I do that I have liked before, or you guys have liked before, that they're not big on. But
for you, Rotten Tomatoes.
No,
is
when I get defensive about a movie and I really like it and then they like it, it's just my like go to argument. I'm like, well, the fucking critics like it, so it must be good.
Nick,
it's just my like
Nick
it's my
defensive about
argument.
Nick getting defensive
you'll
about a movie
about the other critics though. But when it comes to Rotten Tomatoes,
never.
You're like. Rotten Tomatoes is king and Netflix is a fucking joke to you. It's on Netflix.
If a movie's on Netflix, don't even bother. Another thing I was going to bring up is I read an article as well that was talking about this movie is so timeless because there's just so many good messages and meanings within the movie, like overarching themes about friendship and like never giving up and having faith and
hope,
you know, all those things. I think every time, that's why, even though there's some really dark moments early on in the movie, like Rachel hates watching, like, you know, the rape scenes and then the guy getting beat up by the prison guard. Like, some of those scenes in the beginning are really brutal, and you could see how it's like Stephen King's like influence a little bit. Like, he's into some of that darker shit.
Yep.
But then as he gets more like comfortable and acclimated in the system, and he's getting just more of a following, and people are like rallying behind him when he, you know, he like got him the beer and all that. He's like getting all this confidence, and I don't know. There's just so many beautiful moments between him and Morgan Freeman and their friendship, and
this movie is just always uplifting
to me.
I felt like they get out at the end,
they escape.
Definitely, there were some spots that were, yeah, I agree with kind of Rachel. The part with Brooks dying, oh, that was a gut wrencher. There were just some moments,
and they had those scenes in there. And to be honest, though, I mean, I feel like for a prison movie, it could have gotten a lot worse.
Yeah,
and like there's sure. certain scenes that it's implied what happened and not shown, and I think there's a lot that can be said about that. Because there's definitely movies that will show a lot more, but I think that in a prison, especially, I mean, the psychology of a prison, all these fucking testosterone filled males just that have like pretty much like done crimes all in the same place, just it's just and like they taunt the people on the first day just to see who's gonna break. Like, it's so crazy to think of like what's going through the minds of these people.
Oh, for sure. And,
I mean, when you're in right. there, it's a whole other world. It's like, and it's like they get punished by going to the boot. It's like, what do you do if you're already in jail and now you're getting punished? It's like, well, I guess you're gonna, you know, you could get an assault charge by if you punch someone anywhere, you know, if you punch someone, you can get an assault charge and go to jail. And then you punch someone in jail and they're going to like put you in the boot. And I, is that like another assault charge? Do they do that? Is, are they just like tallying charges? Or are they just like,
I mean, I'm sure it depends. Under the
rug and let's just.
Yeah, it depends.
I'm sure it depends like what you do. I mean, if you stab somebody with a knife in prison, I'm sure they will give you more prison time. If you get into a fist fight, I don't necessarily think that they
and
would
also
do that,
consider the fact
I was saying, consider the fact that
he's very intelligent. He's like pretty much a CPA like Trent. He can do the taxes. He knows how to do he becomes the prison financial advisor, essentially, in all aspects. He ends up doing that. And so because of his intelligence, the guards like pretty much beat up the sisters and they're like, stop fucking with him, because he like went to the infirmary that one time when they really fucked him up. And he was like, I mean, you could argue that if he didn't have his intelligence and he didn't like speak up on the roof that day when he heard the guy over talking and he was like, I know a solution to his problem. You could argue that he probably would have like died, or, you know, I mean, who knows, dude? You could have killed
himself. He would have been
like
another cog in the...
been very unhappy.
He would have been another cog in the machine that is the prison system. He would have been just like every other prisoner that came in and was indoctrinated into the system. Steven, I have a stat here that you'll appreciate for the audience members. Steven is obsessed with the sound quality. And this one is, the prison is located in the flight path of C-130 Hercules aircraft of the 179th Airlift Wing National Guard, which caused all sorts of sound problems. Steven would have had
a heyday. Sound issues. Nick will send me his files, and it sounds like a bubble bath sometimes. Trent sometimes the sound quality is... I'm just kidding. We do strive for sound quality on this podcast. You see, we're XLR mic'd up. But Trent, yeah, I can see that being a huge issue. That would piss me completely off if the whole time I'm trying to do any podcast.
I knew you would like that one. I knew you would like that one.
Yeah, anything. It's got to be quiet.
So I have a few points on the differences between the book and the movie. So buckle in and grab some popcorn, Steven. It's about to get real riveting because I know you like these things. So some of the differences. So you know that guy Tommy, who was like the young cocky kid who came in, who got shot by the prison guard. So apparently his, in the book, he doesn't die that way. He's just like transferred to a different prison. So that was kind of a big difference.
I liked it more in this, in the movie, because it was like the warden took him out because he knew too much. I thought it sent
a good body count.
Well, no, it sent a better message for like the metaphor, but go on, Nick.
Yeah. Another one. So, you know, the warden who like shoots himself in the chin,
yes.
When he, you know, when he realizes the jig is up. So apparently in the book, he looks like he just, resigns. So he doesn't,
They dramatize this one.
Let me also say another point on this one. I like that he shoots himself in the movie, because you notice that everybody thought he was going to hang himself, but he ends up escaping. Right. Not the, I forget what his name is, the protagonist of the movie. And instead, the warden ends up killing himself. So it's like a reversal thing going on there. I thought that was really cool.
There's a lot of differences here. Another one is, you know, Brooks, the old man who like hangs himself. Apparently in the book, that doesn't happen either. He was like a much less significant character. So I guess in the movie, they just hyped him up a lot more. And I'm glad they did, because I really liked his character in this. But in the book, he was like a lot less important. And when he's freed from prison, he ends up just in an old person's home and dies of old age.
That's not as good either. Come on, Steven. No, King.
Can we talk about the fact that, again, back to the psychology of what these guys are going through. I mean, this guy has lived his entire life in the prison system, and he is literally scared to get out. He puts the knife to the guy's neck, and he says, "This is the only way they'll keep me here." And he's like, "All I did." He's like, "What'd you do?" He's like, "What'd you say to him?" He's like, "All I told him was that is, like, he was free to go home or something like that." And it's just crazy to think that, like, someone that has been in jail. Like, I was telling Courtney, like, imagine you just, you've been in jail for 30 years since you were 18, and you just got out today. Like, the world would be a completely different place. The world would be just such a completely different place.
That's what I love about this movie, too, is just learning about how that, quote-unquote, rehabilitation process works. And you kind of just get shoot off into the world and have to fend for yourself after, yeah, being there for so long. And you have no sort of, like, transitional, you know, runway to get there. It's just, like, jump right in. And it was really interesting how he was talking about, like, I actually wrote down some good quotes about basically where he's talking about, like, when they, yeah, he says, where is it? He says, this is Red, Morgan Freeman. He says, "I'm telling you, these walls are funny. First you hate them, then you get used to them. Enough time passes, it gets so you depend on them." And that's institutionalized.
Yeah. And you know what was great is that was the first time I really understood what institutionalized meant. I had heard it before, and they even use it prior in the movie, but it wasn't until that scene when he says, "You depend on them," that I was like, "Oh, that is very interesting. That's what institutionalized means." That old guy at the very end was so institutionalized that he would just rather die than. And it's like, I was even.
He was thinking about committing another crime to go back in.
No, I know. And it's, I think it's different between nonviolent and violent crimes. But I think, I mean, with a person that old, they should almost have like a choice whether they should stay at that point, especially if you've kept them for like multiple decades for a nonviolent crime. Well, I guess a violent crime might be very different, but I mean, Morgan Freeman ends up getting out and he murdered somebody.
I definitely think this movie kind of pokes holes into our entire system and how it needs to clearly be, changed. But let's try to stick to, the section we're in, guys, and continue on stats and facts. I was going to say, I think this is the first time Morgan Freeman narrates a movie. It's his first narration role.
Interesting. It may have been his first really big role, wasn't it?
Well, maybe. Yeah, one of them. He looked kind of young.
I remember seeing this quote a long time ago that said something like, it was along the lines of like, don't think you're getting too old to do anything, like Morgan Freeman. Like, it was given all these examples, and one of which was about Morgan Freeman in Shawshank Redemption. And I think it was like, he was still an older guy, but like, I mean, he's done like, he's done Into the Wormhole, the universe channel show, or the, you know, the show about the universe, and he narrates and commentates on that. And he just, his career is completely blown up. And I was looking, he's done a lot of stuff, but I think maybe this was one of his bigger, one of his first big films for him.
Yeah.
I may be
wrong on that. One other quick difference while I was on the differences between the movie and the book. Apparently in the book as well, he's suicidal at some points. So
Andy?
That's kind of, yeah, Andy, like while he's in prison, is kind of suicidal, which I feel like is a pretty big difference, because
throughout the movie
he's like the most optimistic character, and you know, he's the one who's holding on to hope while everyone else is like,
yeah,
hope
dude.
Is dangerous. Like hope can like kill you, you know, like hope is a bad thing. You shouldn't have that. Meanwhile, he's the one who has hope, and he never loses hope really until the moment where that kid Tommy dies.
The evidence.
Where he was like really close with him. He like taught him, you know, taught him how to read and write and all that stuff.
And that's why
and
I think the,
that's when he's like, you got to get busy living or you got to get busy dying. And that was like one of the most kind of significant quotes, I think.
That's got to be why the movie, in my opinion, is better if all of those are accurate. Because, yeah, it's better if he's not suicidal because he has hope all the way up until there's no evidence to prove his innocence. And then obviously he loses that hope. Right. So then you think he's going to be suicidal and he buys the rope, but then he does the switch. And you know, I love that part, but I don't want to get into
it. I think the whole escape is so interesting. In fact, I used to play this game and
were you surprised, Steven?
I was very surprised at like his thing, and I used to play this game, and I'm about to start playing it again. It's this iPhone game, not a sponsor, called Escapist, and it's this fun little pixel digital game, and you're literally in this prison, and there's a routine you have to go through every day, and you have to slowly break out of the prison, and it's like your whole goal. There's a lot of different ways you can do it, and it's just sort of that thing you have to kind of figure out how to. It's a really fun game, but yeah, just seeing how he covered the whole. His wall with the poster, and he had been slowly chiseling. He was playing the long game, you know. He was like, I'm gonna do this, and it's gonna be six. And even he was writing the letters a week, every single week, a letter to that place for the books, and he was just very persistent in everything he did. He was like, slowly but surely, he's gonna work at all these little things, and they're all gonna. I mean, a lot of it took 6 years, and you know, I'm sure the hole to escape through that entire hole he dug, it probably took him the length of the time that he was there, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't remember the first time watching it. If I knew that he escaped, or if like I saw it coming, I definitely didn't. I would imagine, but I would recommend Steven watching it again because you get to see. There were a lot of times where he almost got fucking
just little nuances.
He almost got fucking caught, you know, with the poster being up and him having the same cell the whole time. In the book, the Bible, the warden takes, and he's like, "Here's your Bible back," you know. And so Andy takes it back.
Think about the fact that he's in there for two life sentences. So it's like. There's no way
he's got nothing to lose.
He's really got nothing to lose. And it's like to think about someone like, I mean, shit, if I was in prison on a life sentence, especially if I didn't do it, I would probably try to escape. Or at least, you know.
Well,
it's like, what are you going to do?
What's great about the movie is it's almost like sleight of hand where they're pulling your attention away from it all happening. They never discuss him breaking out. Like, you know, the show like Prison Break, it's very obvious like they're planning an escape. Whereas this kind of movie, it's very behind the scenes. And I read an article that was really interesting saying the writer or director is almost like pulling your attention away from the thought of them escaping because he's talking about how much they depend on the prison to survive and how they're institutionalized. So there's this huge theme of we're scared to get out. Once you get out, you know... it, you know, you're going to kill yourself. It's better in here. Meanwhile, like Andy for however many years has been just chipping away with this little freaking toothpick thing, rock pick. And, I remember the first time I saw that scene of that rock hitting and him sticking his hand in there. I was like, holy shit. And to touch on that scene real quick, apparently that was like, to talk about the Christianity thing. That's apparently a symbol of like rebirth, because the poster was like of a woman and he like sticks his hand through her and like, yeah. He's like rebirthed out through the sewer as a free man, as like a newborn man on the other side. And like, it's literally like him going through this woman. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, I didn't pick up on any of that.
Or the, cause he goes a long way, like 500 yards, I think, through sheer crap. And comes out. Yeah. Yeah. That is very interesting, though, the comparison.
With the shoes.
I never like pick up on stuff like
not
that.
Not only... Sorry, I'm going to vent real quick or ramble, but not only was he smart enough to escape, like the icing on the cake was he was smart enough to create this separate business partner that didn't exist until he became that person. Mm-hmm. And then he basically like drained all the money from the bank accounts, fucked over the warden, and then like dipped to Mexico with all this money. Like, it could not have gone better for him.
No, yeah, and you can tell he had been planning the whole thing for such a long time. It was like, it was all methodical, all planned out. And like you said, you didn't see any of it. You know, you didn't know it. It was just kind of like a twist almost, which Nick loves those twists.
You know, I love me a good twist.
Well, they had back to the biblical reference, it was like when he got out, he was resurrected like Jesus. And that was another thing I heard. But also, Nick, they do, which I thought was interesting, shed light on the fact that he might escape. And Morgan Freeman's like, what, are you gonna, you know, dig your way out of here or something like that? And I thought that was really interesting watching it again, that they kind of spoil what's gonna happen.
Well, there's some foreshadowing. Did you catch that one part where they were talking about that book, The Count of Monte Cristo, which I had to read in high school?
Yes, they
and do. He was like, what's it about? And he's like, it's about a prison break. You would like it. And it's like, yeah. Going back and rewatching that, you're like, there's all these little
hints,
like references, all these little nuggets.
Yeah.
Where they're foreshadowing. No, but
and
that it's
think
coming.
Of it, because you see there's one point where Morgan Freeman gets the rock pick for him, and he says, I finally got the joke. It would take forever to like dig your way out of this place with this little thing.
And it took and exactly
I was thinking, I mean, like, years? If you think about it, you know, this guy is like going to spend his entire life in this prison. So what is 6 years? What is 10 years? What is even 20 years of something really moving that you're slowly pecking away at to like, escape or something, you know? I think it's really interesting to think of like that. And he pretty much started day one overall, like planning his escape.
Oh man, I really want to go into how it's unrealistic. Just for the sake of you two being on this episode.
Well, can we talk about the unrealisticness of the fact, so he gets arrested for his wife's murder and her she was cheating on him, and so it's very like very obvious that the motive could have been, you know, he's pissed off at his wife, and he goes in there and kills them both.
Right.
So it even shows a scene of him there with a gun and the liquor bottle, and he's like at his house, and he's like,
for
really?
Sure, for sure.
And all right. And so, all right. So we're here, and you know me, I know I like Dateline. I know how these things are supposed to go. And to be honest, I mean, the guy is where he's supposed to be, because all right. So the story goes, he's there with his liquor bottle and his gun, the same gun that happened to kill or whatever. And he gets out the liquor bottle with his fingerprints is there. His footprints are there. He's at the scene of the crime on the night of the crime with the gun that did the crime. And then he's like, all right, never mind. I'm going to go back to my car and leave. So, okay, he goes back to his car and leave. Why the fuck does he chuck his gun in the lake? What's the significance? Why would you get rid of a gun that is legal?
A perfectly good gun?
You didn't commit a crime. Why throw his gun in the lake? I don't understand that.
It's a good point.
I don't know. So I'm going to revert to the suspension of disbelief that we talk about all the time on this podcast.
No, but to Trent's point, the realisticness, and not Trent, I hope this is what you're talking about. If not, you can add on to what you were going to say. But
the movie's about the themes of hope and camaraderie. And
I agree.
And
I agree. That's
about.
But I'm talking about the, how he gets into jail.
Did he throw the gun in the lake?
How he's an innocent man that gets into jail for the murder of his wife is right. what I'm skeptical about. Okay.
Yeah. No, because, Stephen. My skeptical came when how did he manage to go 50 feet into a wall with nobody hearing it. And then when he does go and he has to hit the metal where the sewage pipe is, it takes him three tries to get through it. Are you kidding me? No way. So
I'll give you that. I didn't even notice
and
that.
Nick, I totally agree. There's movies that it's like not real, but the whole time I'm watching and Courtney's like, well, did he do it? Like, and I'm like, well, one, I don't know. I've never seen it, but like, I mean, if it goes to court, I mean, this guy is going to jail. I mean, unfortunately, even though he didn't do it, he should have never been there with a gun. And then,
right.
And then at the scene, I mean, it's just the most the most coincidental thing that could have possibly happened.
It's too coincidental. Yeah.
Like, and then
go ahead.
The kid that is about to break this wide open is like, oh yeah, I heard this story one time. This one other inmate told me that he killed this golf pro and his wife or his mistress, and then the husband got blamed for it because she was cheating on him, and he was like laughing about it. So now they know this guy, and he's like, it's just one of those things. It's like, it doesn't matter because there's so much evidence that you were there at the scene and you had so much motive. And there's like, the odds are beyond astronomical that someone else is going to show up that night to rob it and kill them both out of like pure enjoyment. That guy was like laughing about it. He was like, I enjoyed it. That was great. I killed them both. And it was funny. He like got blamed for it. Like, he was just like psychotic and, you know. But I do agree that the movie isn't going to be perfect, but overall, I did like a lot of those themes. But yeah, the fact that he got framed that way, I thought it was just very stupid.
It was very coincidental and almost like a little too unrealistic that he would run into the person who knew the guy who killed the same people. But at the same time, I will say, like, I take some of that with a grain of salt. And also, he'd been in jail for what? How many years? Like 18 years or something, and ran into a ton of people that are like in and out of the prison system. Like, if the crime was done locally, it makes sense that he would be in a local jail or somewhere nearby. But
well, not even that. I'll even give everything that happened 100% up until the point when he tosses his gun into the lake for no apparent reason. That's what I don't get. That's where it's just like red flag. Right. Like, I could maybe see like, oh, well, like, I came really close to killing someone and like, I don't need to have this. That would be the thought in my
head. Yeah, Steven, we got you.
Maybe he got scared and he was like, I don't want this gun anymore in my possession. Like, I was wrong for what I was about to do. I'm getting rid of this gun and I never want to see it again.
You
so
could think that maybe.
maybe, dude, he was drunk. He was also drunk.
Well, I know, but maybe yeah, that's what's
we're
going
in the, we're
through.
Getting,
but yeah,
we're getting in the nitty gritty here.
Do you guys
have any more stats or facts? I think I'm ready to skedaddle here into the five for five.
Nick's ready
five
to
for
skedaddle.
Five to stay alive.
Five for five.
Okay.
Five for
five. Five for five. Stay alive.
Let's put some makeup on this pig.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's put some makeup on this pig. This week, 5 for 5, Nick Jones, Shawshank Redemption.
And I want some bacon.
So if you're new to the show, the way that this section works is we're going to be doing 5 questions here. You got to get 4 out of the 5 questions correct to win that sweet, sweet $5.
Sweet, sweet $5.
And it's Trent versus Steven today. Boys, are we ready? Are we confident? Are we
loose? I know
I
am. Steven, you're going down.
Did we shave? Did we limber up?
Yeah, I stretched.
Got a good breakfast in this morning.
Yeah.
I did none of those things, but I'm ready.
Perfect. Perfect. We got some liquid confidence there. That's all you need. All right.
That's right.
Question number one. So in that one of those opening scenes when all the prisoners are betting on who is going to cry first, right? Mm-hmm. That scene?
Yep.
How many cigarettes did they bet?
Ooh.
We got 5, 10, 15, or 20.
So how many?
Weren't there multiple different bets?
Yeah, there were different bets. Are you talking about all the cigarettes that were laid out at the end for that one guy?
No, just... It was just the bet that they all agreed on, like, how many cigarettes they would each bet.
Oh, I thought Red had to give more than some of the others.
Oh, I think I know then. Yeah, go ahead one more time on the answers for the audience.
But it was a little bit confusing because when they were paying up at the end, I don't think that they actually paid up the like right amount because I was like, that's not what they said that they were going
to
bet.
I thought Red had to pay more, but okay, give us.
I think the whole system was probably foreign to us and how the bets were being taken, because at one point he's like, all right, who do you have? He's like, I've got this guy. And then one guy was like, bullshit. He's like, well, like, take me up against it. And he's like, all right. And then like he bets him, I guess, an additional bet or something. I have no idea how it was going. There was synthetic CDOs all over this thing. You didn't want to get involved.
Shout out The Big Short. So it was explicitly said, interest. I'm pretty sure, by Morgan Freeman. It was either Morgan Freeman or one of them said like, I will bet this amount, like, that
one of them said.
Okay, I know, I do remember, because it was Morgan Freeman that said it.
All right.
Okay, so it's 5, 10, 15, and 20.
Steven,
Trent, why don't you go ahead and try?
All right, well, one of them said they would bet this amount. Goodness. I think it's, if I remember correctly, 5.
I think, if I remember correctly, it was 10.
Trent, you are wrong. Steven, good job. It was 10.
No way. He had way more than... Okay.
I remember Morgan Freeman at one point saying, like, damn, Eddie... Or what's his name? Bobby Boucher, or what's his
Bobby
first name?
Bobby Boucher. Boucher. Andy Dufresne.
What's his last Andy name?
Featuring Bobby
Dufresne.
Boucher.
Waterboy.
He spit in the
I remember he was like, Andy Dufresne cost me 10 cigarettes the first night. He didn't make a sound. Or something along those lines.
Yeah, 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 exactly. That. He cost him 10 cigarettes.
He's spitting the Coca-Cola.
Okay, question number one. Good job, Steven. Okay. So one of my favorite scenes of the movie is when he gets the beers for them on the roof. And
yes, one of my favorite scenes also. Mm-hmm.
Morgan Freeman says the time of the year and the year, like the season and the year that took place.
Okay.
So this is a pretty nitpicky question. I'm just going to say it in advance, but you're going to have to live with it. So we've got spring of 1947, spring of 1947, summer of 1948, spring of 1949, or spring of 1950.
I'm going to go summer.
I think it's summer too. Nick's trying to fuck us.
Damn, those are quick responses. You guys want to lock that in?
I'm locking it in.
Do we want to lock it in?
I'll take that as a yes, Steven.
Yeah.
Oh.
It could have been spring, but I for some reason I was thinking summer. And
spring of 49. It just had a spring of 49 feel in the air back then. It was spring of 49.
They were all sweating. For some reason, I was thinking summer. And so that's why I was like, oh, that's the only summer.
Because it was hot.
It was real hot. I thought it was definitely summer.
It was, Nick. You got us. Trick question. Sneaky bastard.
Okay, Trent, you're out of it. That's okay. You know, you can still cheerlead and play along for fun. Steven, one of two here. Okay, question number three.
Okay.
How many years did it take Andy to get the books after writing to the like government for funding.
Okay.
Oh, I know this answer.
We got, I'll read them chronologically to make it easier. We got 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, or 7 years.
Trent, give it your best shot.
Give it your gentleman's try here.
I'm going to go with Steven's method last episode. Go with C.
Go C?
Yeah, I'm going C.
I think that's it. I think it's C. I think it's six, right? Six is C. And it is six.
It is six.
Yes!
Trent, nice!
What's fucked about your strategy, though, is I had it first, but I only put it at the C spot because it was third in chronological order.
Oh, well. That strategy works, so. But,
anyways. All right.
That strategy works.
Okay. Another year's question. Sorry.
It's okay.
When does Morgan Freeman, aka Red, first show up for his like first appeal? And that in like when they show his first appeal, that he shows up. How many years has he been in jail?
Yes. How many years has he been in jail, or how many, what year is it?
Like, how many years had he been in jail at that point when he showed up for his first appeal?
Okay.
We got 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, or 25 years.
Steven, you go first.
I'm going to go 10. I feel like you should definitely appeal maybe even before 10 years, if I'm being honest, but 10 years for sure.
Trent?
He looked so much older than his picture when he got rejected. And I would think 10 years would not be long enough.
Interesting. Maybe they don't even grant it until like maybe 15 or 20.
I'm going to say 20. See you again.
Trent coming in clutch.
Yes.
20 years.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, maybe there's a, maybe there's
maybe
like,
when you have life in prison.
Yeah,
maybe when you have life in prison, you got to wait a little bit.
Especially for like a murder, I could see that being more of the thing.
Yeah. Right.
But I feel like you can appeal when, I feel like after your trial, you can always appeal. Mm-hmm. And they can get rejected, obviously, but
all right, last question
here.
Just
appeal their case in general, but yeah, go ahead.
Right. All right, last question. I think you're out, right, Steven? So this one's just for fun.
Yep, it's for fun.
All right. What is the city in Mexico that they escape to?
Oh. Can you even pronounce this one?
Yeah, can you even pronounce it?
This is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun time. I'm excited for this.
I know.
We've got Z Wat and Anejo, Z Watanaha, Z Watano, and Z Watanas. Okay. Again.
Steven was laughing.
Again. Again. We've got Zia Watananejo, Zia Watananeha, Zia Watano, or Zia Watanas.
You sound ridiculous.
I think I know what it is.
You're probably mispronouncing it. You might not be.
Steven, you go first.
Maybe mispronounced. I think it's Anejo.
Wait,
B? Trent? What was it, B?
Which one, Steven?
Can you say a B one more time?
I said Zia Watananeha is B. Zia Watanejo is A.
Oh, A. I go with A.
And what was Trent? C? What was C again?
Zia Watano.
Yeah, it's Zia Watananejo.
Zia Watano.
Zia Watananejo.
Fuck, you guys got it.
Yeah, we did.
I was scrambling for a last minute question.
I thought you were going to throw a bunch of different cities in there and then just say Zia Watananejo.
I thought that was a good question, Nick. I like that one. And we didn't win, so thanks. It's not like you had to.
Yeah. Right. The years are tricky, though.
You got us. Yeah. He punked us.
He screwed us.
He got
at least
punked.
There was no blue crab questions. Listen back to Peanut Butter Falcon to find out exactly that reference, boys. Let's get that next section. Director and cast.
DNC.
Director in the ass.
Welcome back to that director and
the ass.
So, Shawshank, this week, what do you got for the director there, Nick? Frank?
Yeah, I got a hefty cast on my right arm tonight for this director and cast. We got Frank Darabont.
Darabont. I think you nailed that, Nick.
Yeah.
Also did the screenplay.
He wrote for The Green Mile, The Walking Dead, but director-wise, he also did direct The Green Mile, which is a great movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And then he did one episode of The Walking Dead, but looks like he's done more writing than directing.
He wrote The Mist. I don't know if you guys have seen this scary movie, but...
Is it good?
No, dude, it was not good. But The Green Mile was really good. And The Walking
Dead. Steven, have you seen The Green Mile?
No, I haven't. I know it's a very
good Tom Hanks
movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and he's from France. Montpellier, Dobbs, France.
I also was going to mention this in Stats and Facts, but I could also bring it up now. Shawshank did win Best Picture in 95, Best Film Editing 95, Best Actor 95, Best Original Score 95,
wow.
Best Cinematography, Best Sound Mixing, Best Adapted Screenplay.
It won all of those?
I believe so, unless that's just like what it was nominated for.
Hypocritical critic.
Oh my god! I love when one question is like, I
think so.
If my source is correct,
I mean, if you Google that, that's what it pops up.
There may have been a miscommunication.
Yeah, 1-7. It did win 7. It won 7 Academy Awards, and I just listed off 7. So yes, I can confirm. Forrest Gump won 6 awards.
Nice.
But yeah.
That's a lot.
Forrest Gump got nominated for 13.
Oh, but it didn't win an Oscar though.
What? Yeah, it did.
Academy Awards is the same thing, right?
It's the same thing.
We've gone over
Academy
this.
Yeah, Academy yeah. Awards is the same thing as an Oscar.
Oh, so it did. I thought I saw something in the trivia section that said it didn't. Okay, we can continue on though.
How about we hit Andy Dufresne?
Yeah, so this is Tim Robbins. I was actually looking him up earlier and was kind of surprised that he's not in a ton of stuff. Like, more so recently, it seems like he's more in, like, supporting cast type of roles, but...
Wait, we're not getting into Morgan Freeman. We're getting into fucking Tim Robbins right now.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins, all right. Mystic
he's like
River,
main guy in
The Player, Howard and the Duck... Or Howard the Duck, and then obviously Shawshank Redemption. He plays Phil Blumbert in Howard the Duck, and in The Player, he plays Griffin Mill. In Mystic River, he plays Dave Boyle. So you may recognize him from them. I don't recognize anything. But he does have 78
acting
credits. He was in Top Gun.
He's in Castle Rock as Reginald Pop Merle or something like that. So
he's in Toy Soldiers.
People probably know him from Castle Rock, Dark Waters. I don't recognize anything. Do you guys?
Yeah, how did he not like take this movie and do more,
so,
you know, hits?
Apparently, let me pull it up here.
But yeah, he wasn't Top
apparently
Gun.
Okay, so Clint Eastwood, Harrison Ford, Paul Newman, Gene Hackman, Robert Redford, and Robert Duvall were all considered for... Oh, I'm sorry. This wasn't for... My bad. This wasn't for Andy. This was for Red. All those people were considered for the part of Red.
So he plays Merlin in Top Gun. I haven't seen that, but you guys may have. 86, Top
yeah.
Gun, Merlin. So he's in that.
Yeah.
He plays Bo in Toy Soldiers.
He's really not main character in Top Gun. He's in Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me. I mean, he's just got like a lot of supporting.
Wait, where was he in Austin Powers?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh, he was the president.
He was the president.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, whenever we mention these, let's just mention who they play, because sometimes, especially when you say something like that, especially with an actor like this, if it's a small background role, you're never going to know. Mm-hmm. But let's move on to Morgan Freeman. Big hitter, no quitter. Pull up Morgie
Free. Yeah, Morgie Free. Love me some Morgie Free. Through the Wormhole.
I'm surprised this is the first movie we've had.
Yeah, Trent, I wanted to talk about Through the Wormhole. Trent, we used to watch this back in the day. And I remember at one point you were like, Morgan Freeman is like God. That's what you said one day.
Well, yeah, because like Bruce Almighty.
Well, no, I know, but it's funny because like in that show, he sounds so intelligent and he's teaching you like the fundamental like ways the universe is essentially working in different ways. And it's like, you're like, man, Morgan Freeman, like, who are you to me? No, but he's such a great actor. And he's known for Seven, Invictus, Driving Miss Daisy, and Million Dollar Baby. Dude has 135 actor credits.
Batman.
Yeah, Batman.
He's in Batman Begins.
He's in Wanted.
In The Dark Knight.
You guys remember Wanted?
Wanted. Yeah, dude. I remember that movie brings me back to Taylor Robbins' house because I remember watching it there at Taylor Robbins' house.
That's funny.
Bring me back to this movie. What was this? Oh, he was also in The Dark Knight, Lucas Fox. Oh, Wanted, Sloan. Oh, let me... What is this movie? Oh, I do remember this movie where they curve the bullets and shit.
Light bulb.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Steven's light bulb.
Well, I didn't see it. I didn't see the...
It is a little cheesy for a concept, but it was a pretty good movie.
Wasn't he like the leader of the team of like crazy people?
Seven was a pretty big movie. I wasn't super impressed by it, but it is got a cult following.
I don't know if
you've seen it. I almost watched it not too long ago.
Scroll
and
down.
David Fincher directs it.
Scroll to 2004 and check out The Big Bounce. He plays Walter in The Big Bounce.
Oh, I finally saw that, Steven.
Did you? It's not. What'd you think of it? It's an interesting movie.
Yeah, you've been talking about it for years now. Some of these movies
I just have to watch. Skepticism.
Well, it's Owen Wilson.
Yes, what did you think of it? What did you think of it?
It's Owen Wilson and Charlie Sheen, Willie Nelson, and Morgan Freeman. And it's a really funny movie. He's like this like surf bum and he's a small time con artist in Hawaii. It's funny.
It's a great chill movie to put on with.
It is and that's what I love about it. It's like one of those chill Sunday movies that is just like good to put on and relax to. It's beach vibe. You get it's just very laid back kind of movie. I've always liked that movie for that aspect of it. And I just love that. That movie got me into Owen Wilson.
Yeah, Nick, we're talking about Saw. Super chill.
Sunday.
Yeah, casual.
Super vibe, super chill. Yeah. Especially all the Saw scenes.
But I love Morgan Freeman. I mean, he's a boss. He's so good. Just known for so much stuff.
He plays
our generation's, grandpa.
Yeah. let's move on to Bob Gunton, who plays the warden. I feel like I've seen him in a lot of stuff. Primarily, 24. So this is Bob Gunton. He was in Daredevil, Mountaintop, 24.
Oh, wow. He looks old in this picture.
All these guys look older because they were already kind of old in this movie.
I know, Trent. That's very disrespectful. Okay, jeez.
I'm sorry. I just was thrown off by his picture because I'm
PC,
used to the warden.
Bro.
But yeah, he was good. He was good at being an ass.
No, he was a very big asshole in this movie. But you know what? I've realized the more you hate a person, the better they're doing at acting.
Yeah, I mean, we're in Director in the Ass, but like, geez.
Well, he was just a very good actor. He did pretty good in his role, I feel. And I thought because he was the one that was like really about religion and the Bible and everything, but he was obviously doing a lot of shady scams and practices that get money. And then he's over here treating humans like this. And it's like, you know, how much can you really
credit yourself? And I loved how,
is that just a way you veil yourself and your,
I loved how this sign in front of his safe was, you know, judgment day will come, and judgment day did come, you know, from all of his shenanigans going on with this, with his money.
No, absolutely. He plays the warden in a Family Guy episode, apparently.
I saw that. I saw that. But yeah, really good actor. He did kind of play the corrupt Christian figure in the movie, which, yeah, there's just a lot of irony. And I guess kind of similar to There Will Be Blood in a way, like kind of this clash with religion in a way where, you know, what the protagonist is kind of, I guess, fighting back against this religious figure who, you know, they both have their kind of like own interests and motives in mind and whatnot. But it's very clear that he wanted to keep him in the system because he was laundering all his money and he needed somebody like on the inside who could be his like personal banker.
He was essentially enslaving him into doing that.
For sure.
And what was really interesting is he comes to him and he says, you know, there's this witness that I know there's information that can make me a free man. Like if I can appeal with this information that like I have actual information that could lead somewhere. And then the warden is like, no, we're not going to do that. And then you see the warden later takes this kid that gives the information originally in the middle of the night out in the middle of the yard randomly and gives him a cigarette. And he's like, so like, I need to make sure like what you're saying is true. And at one point you almost think he's about to just be like, yeah, like, all right, we can do this and we can try to, you know, get this on track. But ultimately, he says, yeah, you know, I would go up on a stand of a court. And then he looks up and then he gets the kid shot. And he was pretty much like, I'm keeping this information away because I want to keep him here and everyone here at the jail happy by all his financial. He's laundering all my money and he's doing all my bookkeeping and checking. Like, this guy is running my companies pretty much on a day to day basis.
So let's hop into the next actor here, William Sadler.
Yeah, he played Haywood.
As Haywood.
And yeah, he did a good job. I really liked him. I really liked him in that scene where he's like singing that Hank Williams song and he's just like,
yeah,
he's like really getting into it. And I forget how it goes, but it's very like, like he's like really going for it. But
what's this? Yeah, first
he
movie?
Played in
Bill and Ted's Bogus. It's got Keanu in it.
He also played in The Mist.
Ooh, Trent.
Yeah, Die Hard 2. The Mist was subpar, as I said earlier. But yeah, this movie's got Keanu, young Keanu. I wonder if it's good.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, he was kind of like a minor, more of like a supporting character, but he definitely did have some moments.
Young Keanu.
I do love that scene where he...
Oh, I'm sorry. I was listening to Joe Rogan today talking about how he loved Keanu, and I was thinking about Trent the entire time. But go ahead, Trent, Nick.
I was just saying that scene where, and I'm surprised you listened to Joe Rogan, but the scene where he plays the music, and we'll get to it later because I love that scene, but he's like, man, you had to play opera? Like, couldn't play like some Hank Williams or something like that? Like, come on.
Oh, yeah. He was like, couldn't you play something better?
Yeah, and then he ends up like getting to listen to Hank Williams on vinyl.
I know,
he's actually in Eagle Eye with Shia, which is a good movie. We keep talking about Eagle Eye.
Oh, he's in Eagle Eye?
Yeah, he's Jerry's dad.
I need to go back. It's been years since I've seen that. But yeah, he did a good job. You guys want to move into Brooks, who, where is he? He's played by James Whitmore. There's a few down there. But
wait, one more time, who is this?
He
James Whitmore.
James Whitmore. the old man who hangs himself.
Oh, right. Brooks.
He's known for Shawshank, Give 'Em Hell, Harry, Battleground, and Them. So I'm not seeing too many bangers on here.
I like his scene when Andy's there for the first time eating lunch and he finds a maggot, and his first interaction is this guy saying, "Are you going to eat that?" And he's like, "No," and he gives it to him. And for a second, you think he's going to eat it, and then he gives it to his little bird. You know, yeah. It's funny. I was watching this movie, and I have, like I said, I've never seen this movie, but I must have seen that scene before because I remembered. I was like, "Oh, he's about to give it to him, and this guy's got a little bird." I was like, "I've seen this scene for sure." Kind of, it was very interesting seeing that.
Yeah,
I must have seen scenes maybe, from the movie, but not the whole thing.
Maybe like a meme or GIF of it. Has like gone around or something like
no,
that.
No, this was I had actually seen that's kind of like before though. I think I may have just turned it on like watching it one day and just saw it for a minute before it went on commercial or something, and then just continued on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was pretty established by the time he did this movie in 94. He had been doing movies for like it looks like 30 years.
I mean, he was born in 1921, so. Yeah, he was pretty old. He lived to 2009 though, which is 88. Yeah, that's pretty good
math. Math. I like Brooks. He was like the heartfelt character in this. I, you know, tugged on my heartstrings when he did the deed. And then just to touch on him, this wasn't a big character, but I do recognize him because he's in the show Billions. His name's Jeffrey DeMunn. We don't have to go super far in, but he does a really good job in this Billions as the dad. And I didn't even recognize him in this movie.
Yes. Oh, he also plays in a lot of people.
He's in Green Mile too.
He plays in the Gunsmoke.
But in this movie, he's a really famous actor. He's the lawyer trying against Andy Dufresne. He's the one trying to get him into jail. District attorney.
Mm-hmm.
He looks so young in this too.
Can we talk about the villain? Who was the sister? Who was the guy that was after him?
Boggs.
Oh, dude, this guy was creepy. Mark Rolston.
Yeah.
The first time I saw this guy, I just was like, oh my God, this is the guy. This is the guy.
That's the guy. Yeah, he was in Rush Hour 8. He was in the second Aliens.
Wait, I'm sorry. What was his name?
He was in Aliens. Mark Rolston. His name's Mark
Rolston.
Oh, I see him. Okay, okay, Boggs dying.
Yeah, he's in Rush Hour. That's so funny. The Departed. He's in some big movies.
He was in Aliens.
Oh, The Departed.
No, that's the 86. One. Yeah, 86 Aliens.
Oh, Aliens. Okay, sorry. I was about to say, we did that shout out a week or so ago, Aliens, or last week.
Great movie.
Great movie. Rush Hour, he played Agent Russ.
He's in Saw 5.
Nick. Oh, no way. He's in Snowfall. Have either of you guys seen Snowfall?
I don't think so.
Negative.
He plays Max in the original pilot. That's the only episode he's credited with.
He was good at being super creepy, I will admit.
Yeah.
No, he was. I'm trying to figure out, is this guy playing Snowfall? No, but he was definitely the fucking creepy guy. They refer to these guys as his sisters, which is just creepy in itself. I mean, the name, whoa, sends chills down your spine.
Yeah.
But I think that might be it. Do you guys have anyone else you want to hop into?
No, I want to stretch my legs.
Yeah, let's stretch some legs, guys.
Let's slam the brakes, pull an endo, and stretch our legs in the favorite scenes from the magazine.
Richard
Parker.
Richard Parker. Favorite scenes from the magazines, Richard.
Favorite scenes, boys.
We're back.
Fave scenes from the Nick's magazines. Pick. Nick's pick, so it's Nick's kick.
Is that? I know that's on the reviews, but is that the favorite scene?
No, it's on the reviews and it's on the favorite
scene. Stick it.
Kick it.
All right. Well, man, I don't know where to start. I had so many, but the first one that really jumps out, and we talked about it earlier, is just him up on the roof getting the beers with for the his beer. Boys mm-hmm. and not even in the self-interest of himself, just wanting to help out his other guys. And in a way, I guess you could say it was strategic, like he helped kind of win himself over with the group in that way. But I truly do think it was just more of like a camaraderie thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really cool moment. And you're like, man, these guys have been behind bars for so long. And you have to imagine how good that beer would taste on a hot roof. Yeah. And whatever, spring, summer, doesn't matter. As long as it's hot as hell, they're up on a roof sweating in this full like outfit, full pants, you know, long sleeve shirt. And that moment is just so cool. And when he's sitting there just with like the smile on his face in the corner,
yeah,
it's just like such a cool moment.
No, I agree.
And that scene was also such a big turning point for him in the movie, because that's where he says to the guy, you know, you can keep that $35,000. He overhears the guard talking about this issue mm-hmm. about keeping this money. He's like, oh, Uncle Sam is going to tax it. Like, and if you don't do it right, you can get, you know, in all this trouble. So he pretty much says, hey, you know, you can gift it to your wife up to $35,000 and they can't touch it. And yeah. He's like, tax free. And he's like, tax free. And, or however much he said, but, he gives her $35,000.
Yeah, it was a tax-free
that's
gift.
That's what really turns him into prison from, like, you're this... And then you see, after that, he gets sent to the library, and he's like, well, I don't know why they sent you down here. There's, like, really not much to this. Like, I push the cart around at night, and, like, that's it. And, like, these are the books. Like, I don't know why they sent you to help me. And then all of a sudden, a guard comes down. He's like, hey, I want to get some fun set up for my kids' education.
Yeah.
He's like... Okay, well, I guess this is why I'm here. I'm now the financial advisor of the jail or the prison. So anyone that has any issues with, and then like you see, he eventually starts doing everyone's taxes, and like he's doing the warden's taxes. And now by the end of it, he's running all the warden's business and doing all the numbers and stuff. And it puts him in that situation where he has like a better sell than other people it gets to. And he has privileges and
he can
things
hang
up that
posters.
People don't. And It all came from that scene, like you're talking about that. But can I say my favorite scene? Hands down, it's your favorite scenes too. You just don't know it yet. It's the scene, the opera scene.
Yes.
The opera scene.
That's my number two.
Yeah, it's a good scene.
He clicks it, and it's such a great scene. Similar vibe too, like you said, Nick, on the last scene.
It's the first experience.
He doesn't even drink.
Of them experiencing something that they haven't experienced, music or beer. Mm-hmm. So it's both the first time again of experiencing that stuff.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, he just locks the door and he's in this room with the record player. Then he turns the microphone on, so it's being projected to the entire prison, and he's just playing this beautiful opera.
Yeah.
And it's like these two Italian women singing, and I love Morgan Freeman. He says, "I don't know what these two Italian women were singing about, but it was better that way."
You're
like,
right.
I'm glad that I didn't know because like. It could have been anything. It was so beautiful in the moment. And you see everyone in the prison is just stopped. Everyone was doing stuff and they're all just dead stop looking up. They're going to listen to this as long as it's going
on. I did like that scene, Steven. You're
right. It's just one of those things.
It was one of those.
And it was kind of like him. Well, at that point, he was just, he already had so much privilege. And you could tell he was like, this was him going out of his way to like break the rule. But what were you going to say?
Yeah, it's a great scene, and Nick's scene also. And I just want to say with both of them, I think that it really kind of it makes you love Andy Dufresne and the kind of person he is, because you can tell he just wants to like do good and do better for people. And that's like kind of what motivates them. And it almost like when you watch it makes you kind of feel that and kind of want to be a better human in that way, like where you're going out of your way, not expecting anything in return, just kind of doing your exactly. part to help people just feel like a little bit more alive, you know, like in their situation being in jail. It was just his pleasure, no matter if he was going to be sent to the can for a month because he put the music on or whatever the case may be, but like to help people, even, I mean, he was helping the guard with what Nick was talking about. But
yeah.
I think my favorite scene, obviously those ones you touched on, really portraying him as like this really great person. But my favorite scene, I think, is that pivotal moment where they think he hangs himself and he's like, don't make me come down mm-hmm. there. And then you go and you like check the cell and he's like, oh Lord, it's a miracle. He's just vanished. And I think
like a fart in the wind.
I think they did such a freaking good job with just the references biblically again, but then like the pivot that they do and you realize that he snuck out with the poster. I just thought it was done so well that you don't even see it coming. It's kind of like a Fight Club plot yeah. twist. Like you get kind of like the mm-hmm. hints and then all of a sudden, bam, like you realize what happened.
No, I know. And I love that too. And that was what Nick was talking about earlier, that just subtlety. You didn't realize it, but then, and then I remember when he started throwing the rock, the warden starts throwing the rock in the cell and yeah. knew. I was like, he's about to throw the rock at that poster and it's about to open. It wasn't even it must have been like right then I was like, oh yeah, he must have just like dug himself out and he's about to find it through that poster. But what was interesting is that I think when the prison, so there was that one scene where his cell first gets searched, right? And I think the warden is like kind of testing him out. And then the warden is right there. The main like guy, the main security guy is right there. And he's like searching his, and he says something like, there's some contraband here, but like nothing to get too bad about. Mm-hmm. And I think that scene was like the warden, like kind of testing him out, seeing like who this guy was and what kind of possessions he had. And at the time he had the Bible, the Holy Bible. And he said, and so we later find out that this Holy Bible that he's holding in his hand that kind of gets him out of this little bit of a squeeze because the warden thinks he's reading this Bible and the warden is very religious. What he was actually doing was carving it out so he could put his pickaxe into it, his little
rock pick.
His little rock. He had carved out rock in the paper in the Bible that, yeah, he had it hidden in there.
So you could imagine his like him freaking out with that, holding that Bible, and then the warden walks off with it, and then the warden turns around and says, "Oh wait, I forgot. I wouldn't want to deprive you of this." And then he hands the Bible back through the things. And there was at one point he references a couple Bible verses, and Andy gets it, like Andy like continues and like references it properly, and then so he knows what he's talking about, but And you think at the time he's like reading this Bible and he is like, you know, he is very interested in it. But yeah, by the end of it, I thought, and that makes that scene just that much more interesting mm-hmm. looking back.
Gosh.
Yeah. I just love, there's so many quotes in this movie that I loved, and I wrote down a few of them. Again, I will say, I don't think this movie would have been what it was if Morgan Freeman wasn't narrating it, or at least somebody of his caliber narrating the movie. If it was just not narrated, I don't know, something about the way it was narrated, and he just had so many elegant quotes and ways of like saying things. Mm-hmm. But the one quote that really got me, I'll read a few of them, but he says, "I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged. Their feathers are just too bright. And when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice. But still, the place you live in is that much more drab and empty that they're gone. I guess I just miss my friend."
Great quote.
It's like, oh, dude.
Really good.
And then he has this other quote where he's talking about when he kind of first comes in. And he's like, "I could see why some of the boys took him for snobby. He had a quiet way about him, a walk and a talk that just wasn't normal around here. He strolled like a man in a park without a care or a worry in the world, like he had on an invisible coat that would shield him from this place. Yeah, I think it would be fair to say I liked Andy from the start.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such a cool way of describing, like, he did have this, like, this not arrogance to him, but just kind of this aura of belief and hope around him that he almost thought he was like invincible to everything around him. Like he could make it. I don't know. Like, and when he talked about him first coming in, he said something about like he looked like a strong breeze would like blow him over or something like that. Yeah. 'Cause he was like so tall and lanky.
But
I don't know, man. I loved how elegant some of those quotes were. It's just really,
and they also well say put. the biblical reference again, like once Andy did leave, they would talk stories about him. You know, everybody was like talking about how Andy did this and got him beers on the roof. And, you know, I thought that was a cool aspect. There were great quotes.
He created like a legacy, which was awesome.
I thought the quote about they send you here for life and that's exactly what they take. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that too. I love that too. And I also love how he talked about like, I wasn't a criminal on the outside, but once I got here, I became like the best criminal. And that's kind of how prison is. Like, I feel like, and I'm actually kind of into prison stuff a lot. I love like watching documentaries about prison. And I just think it's a really interesting kind of like social experiment in a way, but it's all about like power and like dominance and control. And I feel like in order to survive in prison, you have to be able to like manipulate people or be a good con or start some sort of racket or whatever, like find a way to like hustle and make money in prison. I don't think he did it just to make money. I think he, you know, his intentions were like, I'm going to manipulate these people I'm doing taxes for so I can like better leverage myself.
Yeah. Well, he took,
well, I think it's like any situation he saw an opportunity to like, to be somebody because one, he's a very intelligent guy in a whole room full of very unintelligent people and a broad aspect, you know, people that are, you know, willing to commit crimes to get, you know, in prison. Like, and like you said, this is kind of different than like a normal jail. You're not going to, if you just go to jail, you're going to kind of go to a jail, I feel, and not to a prison. Prison is after they sentence you, you go to court, all this kind of stuff. You're going to be there a while. That's where all these guys are. So it's very interesting. And you know what I was thinking? In his mind, he's like, you know, let's get these books. Let's get people to get us books so we can learn. And it's one of those things. It's like, what do you do in prison? If you're in prison, I can imagine like learning would be very appealing, at least to me. Like, I feel like if I was in prison, I would be like, I want to learn as much as I can. Like, I want to be able to get my master's degree after I get out of here. I'm here doing nothing. I'm going to be fucking learning as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, I would too.
Like, I've got plenty of fucking time to learn whatever I want in here. And what better way to kill the time than just like researching anything and everything.
That's if you have.
So I can see that being a very big appeal.
If you have the resources.
But it's like, you wouldn't think of that initially. You would think of like, you know, people like, are like, oh, I'm going to work out when I get into jail or, you know, whatever the case may be. But it's his way was like, let's like get people GEDs and let's like actually rehabilitate them. And I'm going to help. I'm going to be part of that. And we're going to actually get these guys some like, you know, GED equivalencies. So at least when they get out, they have a better chance of like getting into the workforce and like, you know, and that's what it's all about. I feel, I think it's about taking people that maybe have done crimes and, you know, especially the nonviolent ones that can be, you know, they can be pushed in the right direction and like, you know, yeah, exactly. Rehabilitated, which is what it's supposed to do. And like, I feel like aren't all prisons privatized? Isn't it a private? They're not government.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not sure. This is going outside my wheelhouse a little bit.
I feel like it's private. I'm not, don't quote me on that. We're hypocritical critics, compadres without credentials, but I do think it may be private. And I think when things are private and they're not government regulated and audited on a regular basis, I think things like this, especially back in the day, we're talking about way back in the day, No, never mind current modern day, but even thinking about way back in the day when there was so much shade of gray, I mean, there was probably, it was just probably normal probably for them to be treated very cruelly. And like you said, that first night they get that, they're trying to see who's going to crack out of the fresh crop of new guys that just came in, the fresh meat. And it ends up being that one guy, and they pull him out of the cell and they kill him.
Yeah, I'm sure that shit happens.
Right in front of every, or they beat him, and they beat him to death, and they're like, he says, "Hey, you were in the infirmary. What happened to him?" He said, "Well, he died. The doctor was already gone by that time of the night, and by the time the doctor got in, like, there was nothing he could do. He had been laying there,
right,
like fucked up all night." And it's like they're just trying to like set an example or something or do whatever, but it's like, that's crazy to think about doing that. And then they get away with it. No one ever says anything. You're like, oh yeah, he died in prison. Like,
yeah.
Oh, like really? Like, I don't even need a story. Like, it sounds
another
possible.
Kind of interesting theme I noticed was that, you remember how they say everybody's innocent? Everybody's innocent in here. And
yeah,
what was interesting was that, you know, Andy Dufresne was innocent technically. And the only guilty one really was Red, who like admitted that he was like guilty. And then I thought that was kind of an interesting aspect of the movie. But like at one point, the quote he says is basically how he's not even looking for rehabilitation anymore, but like he's looking for redemption. And life has just passed him by, you know, by this point, and he just feels regret. And like, that's the God's honest truth. And like his last third parole, for parole. So I thought that was really a really cool part. And then just like him having hope, like he didn't have hope and he thought he was going to be, indoctrinated or whatever. He was going to stay in the prison system and never really get out. But Andy was kind of like his hope, because he would meet up with Andy in Mexico. And, you know, like that was like this dream. So something to like keep him going. Otherwise, he would have been just like Brooks and he would have hung himself.
I love right. that happened too. I love that they met up. But can we talk about, going back to that point originally, the psychology of someone that's going to be in prison and be like, it wasn't me. Like, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And like it was. It's like, you're in prison.
I kind of took it like they
were.
Why
are you going to act like?
I kind of took it as they were like joking around, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's almost like they're all guilty. If they're in there, they're guilty. So they must have done. I mean, obviously, the rare exception of Andy's case, they didn't do it. But most of the time, I feel like if you're in prison, you are guilty. Again, there are rare instances and, you know, whatnot. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of just took it as more of like a running joke that they just told all like the new guys that came in, because all the new guys probably were super curious, like, what are you in here for? What are you in here for? And it's kind of, I almost just took it as like, shut up, you're the new guy. Like, we're not talking about this. Like, we're all innocent. And I don't know. I didn't take it. I didn't look into
no,
it.
No, and I could see that being more of a thing. That would make more sense in my eyes. Because I can't see like everyone in there being like, no, man, it wasn't me. Like, lawyer yeah. fucked me. Like, the come on, man. You got caught and you got a lot of evidence against you, or else you wouldn't be in prison.
Yeah, but I mean, so it's like the mindset of prisoners. They say that stuff, you know? It's like, oh, right. I didn't do it.
No, I know. And I just couldn't even begin to understand, like, the thought process of someone in that kind of situation. It's very, that's why I think the whole concept of prisons is just so interesting in general.
So another concept that I thought was cool or interesting as well is, like, I will say that they made, outside of the Andy getting like raped basically by the sisters, their little pact of friends looked very, very fun in a way, like this tight little brotherhood, to the point where I could see why you would never want to leave that. Like, imagine us three plus like Ryan, David, and a few other guys, we're all in prison together and we have our own like little posse. Like, that's essentially what they are. They're all best friends at yeah. this point. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there is an element of prison that is 100% like that. You get really close with the people that you're in there with. But I do think that they didn't show a lot of like, like outside of the rape stuff, like you never saw Rhett get in a fight. You never saw anyone in their group get in a fight or somebody like challenge them or
well, after 10
be like,
years.
Hey, you, true. I'm just saying like they didn't really show a lot of the side of prison. That's a lot about like, hey man, you know, you took my Snickers and promised me you'd pay me back tomorrow and you didn't. So like, we're going to go fight, you know, like there wasn't, they didn't show a lot of that stuff. So in a way, like it did seem kind of, I'm not going to say it sounded good or whatever, but if you get to a point where you're not getting fucked with anymore and you're not having to fight on a regular basis or get your ass kicked and you can just hang out with your boys, I can see why it would grow on you over time where you're like, this is, I have a routine. I do the same thing. I don't want to say prison is good. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like I could see why that would grow on you and you would get accustomed
just chilling
to
with the boys,
like playing checkers with the boys, you know, feeding the crazy old man's bird, you know, they're playing catch outside. Like outside of, if you're in the hole, like he was for 60 days, that's a whole nother beast. And no, I read you can do, though, you can get psychological damage after only being in the hole for like 2 days, I've heard.
Wow. I bet.
No, and I could see that, but I was also back to your point about the friends and making the friends. The whole time I'm thinking, I'm like, what is the process of essentially like making friends in this place? Like you walk in to this huge cafeteria of convicts. And you're like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to sit down in an open seat and hope that those guys are good because those are the ones that I'm going to meet first, I guess. And then, and you see, he sits down at the corner table and he pulls up the maggot and the guy and the old man he talks to takes it. But, like he just, I think he doesn't talk to Morgan Freeman until like a month after he's been there, which I thought was interesting. He was just sitting back and like seeing who is who and seeing how people act and who they are. And then he's like, all right, I think, you know, I hear people talk that Morgan Freeman is like a chill guy that is like reliable to get me some stuff and he's fair. And so I'm going to go talk to him. And then like automatically they're like, he's going to be a good friend that he made because he's already asking, or he's probably asking around, hey, like, is there anyone that's like sane that can give me some stuff? I'm not trying to deal with like any fucking crazy.
I'm sure
person.
it's just like high school or any old thing where like, give it enough time and you'll gravitate towards certain people. And, especially give it 30 years, you know, you've kind of established yourself as like a certain person at the prison and you're like this guy who does the books or does the work outside or, you know, whatever the case may be. I'm not too surprised at how he made his friends and everybody kind of gravitated towards Andy anyways, because he was a cool guy.
Right. Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes, one of my favorite scenes was the, I loved that he loved geology so much because it was kind of nerdy, but
yes.
But at the
and
same
chess.
Time,
he liked chess.
Exactly. Yeah. He made his little chess set and I was like, damn, that's a pretty nice chess set because it was handmade.
No, but I definitely also was very into the geology of it too. Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back around when he, you know, with the fact that he got out with his knowledge of geology, but I thought that was a cool aspect. And then obviously you have to say your favorite scene. Well, before that, get busy living or get busy dying. Great quote. I think we,
Trent, were you getting aroused when all those taxes were being filed?
Oh yeah. The 1040s, man, when he got those 1040s gone and then he made some comments about, you know, tax evasion for, or it's not really tax evasion, but getting around gifting money so it doesn't get taxed. And, you know, some of his loopholes that he had, I was like, this is accurate. And I thought that was a really cool aspect of the movie. I mean, there was a lot of cool aspects, but favorite scenes. I mean, we're on favorite scenes. The last scene is just like, it's so good. Like
when they're reunited or when he escapes,
when they reunite at the very end. Yeah. And even before that, when he finds the note and he finds the money, that's another great scene. And yeah, he gets reunited. And the thing about this movie is I think it's universally good by, you know, guys can watch this, girls can watch this. It's just a good story because you really don't...
Such a good story.
You don't know much about, you know, prison systems per se, most people. And so you're watching this kind of, your eyes are getting opened a little bit. But more than that, it's the story. It's like the underlying things that you don't even realize you're picking up on, but... It's just what makes a good story is just like,
but can we talk real quick about the fact that he's like, all right, he's like, let me tell you something. So in Marietta, there's this hill with a tree on it. Big red wall. By it, by that tree in this very vague location.
I made love to my wife.
Besides this red wall, this is a very vague description I'm giving. There's a rock on the ground that has no business being there. Under that rock, there's something I want you to have. And he just tells him this in passing. Like you would expect Morgan Freeman to be like, wait, do I need to get some notes out? Like, hold on a second. You said, where is this? By, is it a field?
Suspension,
I don't understand.
You said a field or a...
Yeah, okay, you have to go
it's,
with
it's
that.
It's a hill.
You have to just go with it.
Do I need a map quest it or like, are you going to give me any
he
kind
gave
of directions?
Him,
or
he gave him some pretty specific identifiers. I feel like I could find it if I knew the general whereabouts.
That's like me saying, hey,
it's a little treasure
up
hunt.
In Kennesaw. Up in Kennesaw, there's a hill with a tree. It's not on a farm. There's a red wall by this tree. On the other side
no,
of the
he,
wall.
He
got to find
him
a red
about,
wall.
He told him about this specific ranch or wherever it was at. He was like, do you know where this, or he was like, do you know about this like house or this ranch? And he's like, yeah. And he's like the one with the red wall and this and this. So I'm pretty sure he told him like they agreed. They knew.
Oh, did he
where.
Know about it already?
Yeah, Steven.
I'm pretty sure
he did. He knew.
I'd have to go back and fact check that.
Yeah, no,
that would make more
sense. He generally knew where the location was, but he didn't know like necessarily, I think.
Erroneous.
The wall.
Erroneous.
Yeah, Steven, calm down. And
I just thought it was so funny. It would be like, I feel like he would have, after all that time, at least forgot one detail, but
like,
he's like,
oh,
I remember the verbatim,
bro.
Man.
But
back in the day, man, you had to take a left at the gas station, go 0.75 miles, turn right at the fucking oak tree. That's how they did things back then.
Yeah, but guys, they link
hey, know,
up
man,
at the end. And they work on that boat
in
together.
Such a beautiful
yes, best
way.
Part.
They work on that boat together.
Best part. You know, I was thinking there's so many movies we do that, in my opinion, really shit the bed at the end. And it's just nice
this one does
to
not.
See this. This it just comes around and it's just very happy ending. He's out fixing up his boat, and he even says it before.
Oh, I got you on the boat.
Fix it up.
I know I got
and
you on the
out
boat
in
the salt water.
Fixing his old piece of shit boat. I don't even know how he got that thing there, but
he's got Shia LaBeouf on the way to be his deckhand. I'm sure of it.
No, I know. I thought that was very good, and he found him, and he's like, I guess he like sends him on a little fucking scavenger hunt, and like, hey, you know. I know I originally told you the city that I was in, but I want you to go find this box first. So I guess I give you the option to like, if maybe you want to like party in America before you come over to, I don't know.
He didn't even know that he was getting, he didn't even have the assurance that he would be getting out of jail anytime soon too, right? Because he just happened to win that appeal.
Yeah.
And by the way, when he was not selling the guys on him getting appealed in the first place, and he happened
and
to
you
get appealed,
also
so it's like,
well, I was going to say, you got to understand that he after he escaped, he went back there and he put all that there. So that I thought that was so interesting that he like pretty much was like, hey, I'm going to leave you something in this spot.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to Mexico. But and I guess that's the reason he did it. He was like, well, you're going to be here. You're not going to have the money, but I'm going to leave some for you in this spot. I want you to go get it. And he knew, I think especially by that point, he knew he's like, not only am I going to get out of this place, and he could have had that tunnel dug, but he's like, not only am I going to get out of this place, but I'm going to rob the warden for every penny he's got, close down right. all his accounts and everything. I've already been in here fabricating the identity of this completely false guy, and I'm going to take all that and I'm going to take it out of Mexico. And first, right before I leave, I'm going to make this nice little box for Morgan Freeman, and he's going to come join me once he's out. And that's it.
Happily ever after.
He just thought
what
of
if he
everything.
Had like multiple he's boxes just... for multiple people that he's like, all right, man, listen, yours, It's out by this other ranch. You gotta go out right. by this
He's
other
playing
ranch.
3D he's chess, guys.
He's 100% playing chess. I mean, again, it's not only did he think about escaping, like that could have been a decent movie if he just escaped, but all the extra layers that they added on top of him swindling him, getting him arrested or in trouble, him, you know, leading the clues for Morgan Freeman. It was all just the bow on top. And I think we should jump into the final reviews if you guys are ready.
But I just wanted to add on to the comparison to, I just realized, with the chess and his long game in the prison. And he didn't really go into chess that much, but he made all those chess pieces really, really nice. And he had the chessboard. I remember at one point Morgan Freeman says, I think he like deserves a, like a gift when he gets out of the infirmary. And he's like, oh, well, just the man likes chess. So like, let's get him a chessboard. But
yeah, you think I didn't pick up on that? You think I didn't pick up?
No, I just thought it was interesting.
Trent's not missing out on that.
I didn't miss that.
I didn't personally pick up on the fact that his whole thing was a long game. And that was like a subtle tease to like, he's very familiar with playing the long game and taking his time and doing it right and making sure he's not sacrificing too much on the way. But reviews.
Who's going to?
Nick Jones.
Yeah, Nick, I think you got to start.
I should tear off because it's my pick.
It's a Nick's pick, or as we like to call a picnic.
Go ahead, Nick.
We're having a little picnic here today.
So I'm just going to... I'm not even going to dance around the fucking bush. This is a 5-star movie all day, every day.
All right, dance around the bush.
I'm not even
going to
dance.
Pick.
I'm not even going to do any foreplay here. I'm going right into it.
The fiver.
It's a 5-star movie.
5-star pick.
And I was thinking about it. I was like, 4-5-5, 4-5-5. I just can't deny that this is like one of the best movies I've seen. And It just always puts me in a good place when I see it, even though there is violence and, you know, some you know, hard scenes to watch. It's just like got so many themes. We've talked about so many of them. Mm-hmm. Love Morgan Freeman in this. Again, I think the movie without him is like in the 4-star range. Honestly, like I think Tim Robbins did a really good job. Maybe other actors could have done similar. But something about Morgan Freeman's like calm and steady presence throughout the movie, and he's just the like father figure in the group. There's so many, you know, I am a sucker for a good twist. This had the twist. This had everything you needed. It had the great ending. You know, it wasn't one of those like 90% of it was good, but they shit the bed on the last 10%. This is the number one movie on IMDb for a reason. This is a 5-star movie.
Oh.
Mic drop.
Mic drop. Nick dropping that mic.
Nick is super confident, and he's backing up with credible sources.
I will say, I gave There Will Be Blood a 4-5, but I probably like There Will Be Blood almost just as much as this movie, if not more. Hmm. I don't know.
Interesting.
Ooh, I thought There Will Be Blood was better.
Ooh, hit us with your review there,
yeah,
Steven.
Yeah, why don't you hit us with your review then?
My review, you know, I got a hot take on it sometimes.
Oh, do you?
I got a hot
Steven with a hot take? What?
Wow.
No, I'm just, it was a good movie. I did like it. I'm not going to lie. In fact, I was pretty excited about it. It was one of those movies that I hadn't watched through, but it's so acclaimed in the world that I just knew it was going to be an interesting movie to watch. I knew I was interested in prison movies. At first, when you first said it, I was thinking of a Schindler's List, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like that movie as much. But then you're like, it's the prison one. I'm like, oh, okay. That's for some reason I kind of interchanged those two movies out because I've never seen either of those movies, and I know they're so they kind of interchange.
Schindler's List,
very good movie.
Different.
I like the adding. I agree with you completely when talking about just the fact that Morgan Freeman did such
Morgan
a good
Freeman?
Job. And
my boy Morgan
Freeman. Yeah, the other actor, it could have been interchangeable, but he was very, very good and as the narrator overall and kind of like giving an outside perspective view of the entire thing. And I thought that was really cool. And Yeah, just overall a really, really great movie. I do think that There Will Be Blood was better. I can't remember what I gave There Will Be Blood. Probably a 4.
Oh, I'll tell you. I'll tell you. You gave it a... I'm pretty positive you gave it a 4.
I would say maybe I gave it a 4.
If you're going to go in the... If you go in the 3s for this movie, I will slap you. But choose honestly. Choose honestly.
I'm going to go a 3.5 on this movie.
Oh,
I thought it was a 3.5. Now, and like,
Steven,
it was
what didn't you like
teetering.
About it? I'm unclear what you didn't like. Was it the realisticness of certain things?
I'm unclear too.
I don't know. I think it was a good movie. I just don't know if I'm going to watch it again anytime soon. It was like a really good movie that I'm probably not going to watch again for like, I don't think I'm ever going to go out of my way to watch it again. And I kind of judge a movie.
Why is that?
Yeah, Steven.
Why is that? You haven't done any explaining.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose if it was on, I might turn it on or something, but
Is this, so you're judging how good a movie is based on like how frequently
if you'll
watch
it again soon?
There's some movies that are really fucking good that are hard to watch that I won't watch like often.
Yeah, but that's his marker.
No, and
that's
I agree. And there's just so many movies.
Will you watch Art of Racing in the Rain and cry every day when you give it a 5 stars?
No. And like I said, but bitch. I will definitely watch probably Art of Racing in the Rain once a year though. That's like, when you get up into 4 stars for me is when I'm going to watch that movie like probably once a year. There Will Be Blood, I'll probably watch it once a year from now on. It'll be probably one of those movies
okay. That's
in my arsenal.
We've got a new grading scale for Steven.
Well, this is always how I felt about
Nick, this
it.
Is always
it's a 4 stars. Steven watches it once a year. If it's 16 months, we're down in the 3.5, 3 range. If I watch it once every 5 years, we're down in like 2.5.
Seriously.
Oh, I will not do that. That's the thing. That's the thing. Like, I think probably around a 3 for me is where I won't ever watch it again. The Big Lebowski was probably like a 2.5 for me or something.
What?
Like, never going to watch that movie
but
again.
But why? What is wrong with the movie to give it a lower score for you not to watch it in your weird rating scale?
And there's nothing like inherently wrong with the movie. I thought the movie was a really good story. I thought the reason he got into prison and stuff, like I said, I love Dateline. I'm a critic
of him throwing the gun in the lake. The gun in the lake.
Yeah, I didn't understand why he did that. I didn't understand why he was there in the first place doing all that. I just, it was a very unlucky situation for him, yes, but it was one of the situations that it should have never happened just because it was very unrealistic.
That's fair. So it was the lead up to the murder and all that. I get that.
I'm just giving some of the flaws that I saw as from my perspective. And dude, you got to understand with me too, like when I get into a crime movie, like I'm like hyper focused on it and I'm hyper focused on the details because I want to know. And it's really interesting because the beginning of this movie starts out with them in court and he's like talking to him about the court case and what's going on with it and everything like that. And so for me,
Steven,
it's
what's
like
a
very
what's
high
a good,
standard set.
What's a high standard crime movie? What's a high standard Dateline movie for you? That you're like, that's the pinnacle.
I don't really watch Dateline movies, but anytime we do a movie that involves especially someone going to prison for something they did, you know, there's a case around it and there's usually a hearing and there's a process to it and the whole process is very interesting. That's why true crime is so interesting in general.
Nick, he is dancing all around
your
question.
He is filibustering.
He does not have a clear answer for anything you're asking him.
He's filibustering.
And it's so
obvious. No, I get it.
Why are you guys so offended that I'm giving this movie
a 3.5?
No, I'm
not offended.
Because you're doing a terrible job of explaining why.
A 3.5 is a good rating, in my opinion. It's a movie that I would watch again if it was on, but am I gonna go back to rewatch it again? Like maybe a couple years, maybe I'll watch it next year. I don't know, but like there's a movie like There Will Be Blood. I know that's a movie that I will watch again like next year. It'll be one of those things. It was very good. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna
Trent,
watch
it.
That
was the
movie
gun.
Again.
It was the Dateline gun thing.
There's nothing even bad with the movie. It's just my rating scale is more of like, how often am I going to watch it? Am I going to want it? Am I going to want to watch it again? And we'll get to my pick for next week, and I'll better explain this then. But Trent, why don't you kick us off with your review?
Clear? You clear on that, Trent?
okay. So
Salty Dog Cafe.
Trent's gonna shit on how many times it took him to crack open the pipe.
If I can just first clear up how I feel about Steven's rating system, it's crap. It's crap. It's terrible. Terrible way to go about it.
Is it 500 yards of crap?
Because you can watch a movie and not have to watch it again soon for it to be a good movie. But I
agree, and that's what this was. This was a good movie.
A 3.5 though. That's
I'm not saying
not
it wasn't,
great.
Dude. A 3.5 is in the 80%. It's not a bad movie. By no means is it bad. You guys are mad that I didn't give it a 4 stars. If I would have literally given this half a star higher, neither of you would be bitching at all.
Yeah,
because right
this movie
a half a star.
We're just laughing because. We're like you could spit out like what you did like about the movie. That yeah. was the whole thing.
Well, because I really there wasn't like too much that I didn't like about it. I think just overall in my ranking of movies, I mean, I this is just how I'm working out my rating system, and I think it's working out very well. You might think it's crap.
Yeah.
I think I'm doing very good with it, and I'm actually getting a good rating, and I'm actually looking back at some ratings saying, oh, you know, maybe I would adjust that, and you know, compared to what I you know. It's a process. Okay. It's a big process.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you keep working on it. Keep refining it. I think that a great movie has to at least be 4 stars. And this movie, in my opinion, was a great movie. I agree with all the points, you know, to do it again would just be rambling about all of it. But, you know, Morgie Free, I think, did great. I think this is going to be a classic. It's going to go down as a classic. Like Nick was saying, IMDb made it a top pick for obvious reasons. It just is in the zeitgeist of great cinema and will always be. It will always be a top tier movie that everybody will come back and look at. And I think if it's a great movie, it's got to be above 3.5, but that's just me. I think, you know, I was teetering, like Nick was saying, on a 5-star movie. I don't want to just up and jump to that just because Nick does, even though Nick would probably do that because he likes to be swayed by the peanut gallery. But I think personally, this movie is going to be right in the 4-5 wheelhouse. That's where I'm at with it. Great fucking movie. Great fucking pick, Nick. I loved it. And I'm interested to see
Trent did.
Oh, go ahead, Nick.
I was gonna say, didn't we watch it for the first time in college
together?
Because I remember watching it.
Yeah, I think
at Rockledge, and we watched it with like Lizzie. I'm pretty sure, and maybe Andrea. And I was like blown away.
Yeah, but, and I think I do remember that. Yeah, I think I remember seeing it for the first time in college, but kind of like not. I remember generally what happens, like Brooks dying and him getting away, and but watching it again, I was like blown away at how really well made it was.
I will admit there are some inconsistency or some just minor flaws. Like you said, it would take him way more than 3 hits to crack open the pipe. There's some flaws with like how he got put in jail. But for me, just so much about the movie again is about the themes and the friendship and the hope and all the nice warm and fuzzy stuff that like, it just, I'm not even concerned with the small details being amiss, but
I totally get that.
With that said, Steven
but real quick,
Strata.
Trent, can I ask, why wasn't it a 5-star for you?
I would say it wasn't a 5-star.
Yeah, what didn't you like?
I would say the parts that I didn't like were, I think it was some of the portions where, you know, I didn't believe wholeheartedly.
It can still be a 5-star movie. Your rating system is crap.
I don't think wholeheartedly, like some of the scenes.
Could still be a 5-star movie.
Were
could still be a 5
that I personally
let him spit it out.
I wasn't personally in love with every scene. I think like there were parts of it that were lulls, and that's just me personally. Him getting out and the twist was really, really good. I just didn't have like a dramatic effect on me enough to where And it almost got me there, where at the end of the movie, I was like, wow, like I feel, you know, different now. And it's really challenging my thoughts on this and that. It kind of got me there, but it didn't get me all the way there to justify 5 stars. So that's why I gave it 4 or 5.
It wasn't enough of like a bombshell type of like, holy shit, that movie changed. Because for sometimes for, I will say for a 5-star movie, you got to leave it for me being like, holy shit, that was powerful or moving or life changing or something. So I will say the first time I saw this movie, it was probably more like that. Now that I've seen it like 5 times or so, it's not as powerful, you know, every time, because you know the twists and whatnot. But yeah, a great movie. I respect both of your opinions, even if they're wrong at times. But I'm excited for Steven to leak that freak.
Yeah.
And then by freak,
neither of you guys respected my opinion. You can suck my dick.
How could we?
Neither of you guys.
It was just wrong, but I respect it.
No, but let's get into that freak of leak for next week. My pick, a Steven Strada pick. Everyone, calm down. I know it's your favorite.
The chat section is on fire.
This I'll prerequisite this movie by saying that this movie is a movie that I've watched a lot, and it's going to be very high rating for me because one, the first time I watched this movie in theaters, it blew me the fuck away, and I'll still watch it to this day, so many years later, and it still blows me away. Fucking Avatar.
Ooh,
yes,
I knew that was coming.
Yes, dude,
I knew that was coming.
Avatar. If you got Disney Plus, it's on Disney Plus. Check it out. Killer movie. For some reason, I've literally watched it probably like 10 times in the last like 2 months.
Ooh.
I was about to ask if it involved cars or a dog or
it doesn't.
What is it?
A twist ending?
Moonshine?
No.
Moonshine.
Something like that. But
no, Steven, I actually had a feeling that
it doesn't revolve around
I was like,
the oil.
I was like, Steven hasn't picked
anything like that.
Steven hasn't picked Avatar yet, and like I kind of want to see that movie again soon. So like, but I didn't
I'm
even
pumped because I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. But yeah,
I saw this with my cousins in Florida when it hit theaters, and it was, I remember it blew me away as a movie. It just blew me away. And I'll still watch it to this day. And they've been making they've been announced the second and the third and the fourth one. At least through IMDb, we can see that they're in production. And I think right now they're shooting for 2022 for the sequels, but they killed it with the first movie, and they haven't had any second movies come out in a long time. And, So Avatar next week, Hypocritical Critics, Compadres Without Credentials. Instagram is @hypocritic_podcast. Throw us a 5 stars and a review on that platform. We really, really, really fucking appreciate that.
Yeah.
And you guys, another killer one in the books. Great 3.5, perfect average rating movie.
Such a great average movie. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think 3.5 is above average. Above average, in my opinion.
3.5 is always the weird area. I remember Preston at one point was like shitting on a movie and then gave it a 3.5. And then kind of vice versa. Like you were praising this movie really hard and then you're like, yeah.
Well, it is that. It is that between 3, which is, I think, leaning towards a so-so movie, and then 4, which is leaning towards like, oh, that's a really rocking movie. So it's kind of like
this wasn't
3.5. It's kind of like that. Above average for me.
Definitely above average for me. But tune in next week for Avatar, Hypocritic Podcast.
Yeah, if you made it this far, God bless.
God bless you.